Hello, you're listening to Spoiler.
Build.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
Woo-hoo! That is enthusiastic as I will get.
Hey, tick off, eh? Don't have a go at the film already, you knob. Oh, dear. I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me for the podcast is Anthony Evans.
Hello.
Jamie Thomas.
How's it going, eh?
Yep. And Abigail Bain.
Hi. I'm the only one who's even vaguely Canadian here, and I'm not going to do an impression.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Abby's dad is Canadian.
My granddad's legit Canadian, my dad, technical Canadian, and then I get to say, bit Canadian.
Wow.
Yeah, so the reason we're going to apologise for any partial, insensitive Canadian accents we do is because we watched the film Strange Brew, which is fundamentally about Canada at all. Like, it's just constantly banging on about it, like, it's hilarious. But no, like, so, you know, it's very hard not to watch Strange Brew and come out of it without saying any of their stupid Canadianisms.
Yeah.
But it was Jamie's fault. So, any Canadian listeners, we're sorry if we offend you by mocking your accents. But the film did that, didn't it? So.
Well, they are Canadian, though.
They get a pass, Rich.
Yeah, so Abby's the only one because she's part Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's very hard to offend Canadians. They're also nice and affable.
Yeah, so fuck you, Canadians. How's it like that? Not offended, you? Not offended. And I like that about you. You dick. Look, they're not even offended. They're not even turning off. Thanks for listening. So, Jamie, what was Strange Brew? Or to give it its full title... Doug and Mackenzie's...
Yeah, The Adventures of Bob Mackenzie, Strange Brew.
One more time, sorry?
The Adventures of Bob and Doug Mackenzie, Strange Brew.
Yep.
Okay. Strange Brew is from 1983. It's directed by Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas, who also play Bob and Doug Mackenzie. Canada's most famous hosers, Bob and Doug Mackenzie... get shot. At the Elsinore Brewery.
Sorry, only to learn... sorry. I think we might have laughed over you saying information we need.
Canada's most famous hosers, Bob and Doug Mackenzie, get jobs at the Elsinore Brewery, only to learn that something is rotten with the state of it, which is a really weirdly worded synopsis. And it stars Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas as Bob and Doug Mackenzie. I think also this was both of their debuts in any sort of major movie. Also weirdly stars Max von Sydow as Brewmeister Smith.
Yeah, he did seem out of place, didn't he? What's the three-eyed raven, a.k.a. like Ming the Merciless doing in this thing?
Apparently the reason he was in this was that at the time his son was a fan of Bob and Doug Mackenzie's TV appearances. And he didn't know what it was, but it was kind of a Mario Brothers Bob Hoskins situation. Where, like, a kid went, oh, yeah, no, you should totally be in it. And then they turned up on set just going, okay. But to be fair to Max von Sydow, he does kind of, his performance is kind of like, he just went, ah, fuck it. And because he does, like, he doesn't really phone it in. Like, he's pretty invested in his bizarre villain character.
But he definitely he probably saw the script and went, what am I supposed to do? Silly villain. Okay, got it. I'll just be an over-the-top villain. That's fine.
I was just going to say that he is an actor of such a caliber that you can give him anything, and even if he doesn't try, he'll do it well.
Yeah. He has been, let's not forget, he has been in some shit before, though, because he was in Flash Gordon.
But anyway, he was excellent in Flash Gordon.
He was. Do you know what else he was excellent in? The Exorcist.
Mm. Well done, Jamie. Connected well, to your favourite film of all time.
I have to get there somehow.
Yeah. Okay, so just to give a little bit of background as well to explain this to any of us who watched it and went, what the fuck is this? Bob and Doug Mackenzie are kind of like they're like an early precursor to Wayne and Garth in Wayne's World, who appeared on, I think, was it Saturday Night Live or was it Mad TV? I think it was Saturday Night Live.
I think so. These Mackenzie brothers are from Second City, which is the Canadian equivalent of Saturday Night Live.
It's basically the Canadian Saturday Night Live, and they were like the Wayne and Garth. They were two alcoholic losers who just would basically appear on like a network, cheap network show style segment and improvise rubbish. But they were funny in that same kind of endearing, stupid kind of way.
The Canadian Beavis and Butthead, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's definitely one of the, probably not one of the earliest, because there's probably earlier versions of the trope, because you've got like Laurel and Hardy, and it comes from that, from that background kind of setup, but it's the more modern, and then it leads into Generation X's with like Bill and Ted, Wayne and Garth, Beavis and Butthead. It's definitely of that ilk.
Yeah.
But these two are brothers who, and I know nobody's going to agree with me, but I was actually quite endeared by their relationship as the film went on.
Well, they're like 2 10-year-olds, but yeah, like 2 10-year-old brothers just arguing. Apart from that, one obsession is getting drunk, so it's a bit. It would be inappropriate if they were 10, but they just behave like bickering little kids.
Yeah, and I will kind of put it out there right now, like of everything in the film, because there were parts of the film that I enjoyed, but for the most part, I just kind of tuned out because it was hard to pay attention to it. Mm. And the only thing that I consistently really enjoyed, apart from Max von Sydow and his weird villain, was their relationship as brothers. I just thought they were really endearing together, and I liked their childish bickering with each other.
Yeah, I can understand that. Let's try and nail other people down on what they were expecting. And I'm going to say, Anthony, what did you know of like the background to this? What were you expecting from the film?
I have to admit, I wasn't really expecting quality this time around, because just the general kind of premise of it, it's like there aren't that many examples of kind of sketch comedy characters making a decent film. I mean, they exist. We've got the Blues Brothers, got Wayne's World, got MacGruber. That's a pretty good one.
Hmm. But there's a lot more failed ones.
Like Coneheads, which is a surprisingly terrifying comedy.
Because I guess like it's the translation. You've taken something which is funny for 5 minutes, generally improvised as well, and tried to kind of like script a story around it in a format that it doesn't belong in.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, Rick Moranis was in it. Max von Sydow was in it. There could have been something. I had my kind of like,
let's not neglect Dave Thomas, who is probably one of the classic that guy actors that we like to include in our choices. Oh, hey, it's that guy from that thing.
I remembered him from Rat Race.
I was going to say, I recognised him, but I couldn't place anywhere that he was in. So it's like, yes, you.
That's how it makes like, him the ultimate.
Yeah.
That's true.
The only place I could tie him to specifically was the film Rat Race. He's kind of John Cleese's kind of sidekick.
Oh, yes!
But I think for me and Abby, we semi-recently saw some Second City stuff. Like, we had like a DVD lent to us, and we watched the 70s when they, I don't know what season it was, but it was like Eugene Levy and Rick Moranis and who else, Abby, did we watch?
John Candy.
Yeah, it was like there was a good selection of comedians in it.
But it was very 70s. Really terrible because I don't remember any of the women's names.
The mum from Home Alone, she was in it.
Yeah.
But the point was, we watched a bit of Second City, probably about 4 episodes to see if we could, because you know it's this Canadian SNL, it might have been fun, but it was too dated and too lost in translation. Like, and it suffered from, every now and again there'd be a good sketch, but mostly they'd be like, I don't know, I can't follow this, and I don't know, oh, and we've got a music bit in the middle, okay, this is super boring. Okay, great, more sketches I don't fully appreciate because I don't know American and Canadian television. Okay.
that was a big thing with this movie as well. It's kind of like Americans get the Canadian joke because they're like their neighbors, but like over here, a lot of stuff is just kind of like going over my head. It's like, is that a thing? Is that
the equivalent? The equivalent would be making a film that like is all about what the stereotype of Welsh people that the English have. and then releasing it globally, and tons of people would just be going, what? I don't get it.
Yeah, there's no one in other countries who could watch Satellite City and appreciate
it. Yeah.
Not even Welsh people should appreciate Satellite City. But it's like, they're broad stereotypes, I get it. Like, they're not portraying all Canadians, they're portraying, you know, schmoey losers who are like childish unemployed men, and they wear winter coats everywhere and hats, and they like hockey and drinking beer and calling each other hoses and knob. And yeah, they're two-dimensional in that their only interest is beer, and their interest doesn't seem to be in making a television program or a film. So, like, I don't know. That's hockey and beer and ha ha ha. That's the joke. Like, I think internationally you can get the idea, but how hilariously apt it is, I don't know. How spot on and ref and. Cutting edge. I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. But Abby, did you? I've said we didn't get on with Second City when we watched it. Would you care to add any more? Or, you know.
Well, yeah, it was basically impenetrable.
And dated, and, like, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It was more because they were making topical references. It is so far removed in time and geography that you could only guess who some of the people were and why they were talking about them.
Yeah, they'd have guests on and you'd be like, I don't understand. Is this person playing themselves in a character? Or is this, like, I don't even know who the people were who had guest in the sketches or on the show. And then they would make references to, like, celebrities at the time. And you just, who is Eugene Levy being? All you could do was go, wow, Eugene Levy's hair is a monument. Like, it's so sculptable and so big and so... Wow, it's so 70s. Oh, that's the only thing that kept me going for a few episodes, but we had to give in. And these guys were on, these two characters were on the sketch show, and they were okay. But you know, as long as they didn't outstay their welcome, it was fine. So I wasn't really looking forward to this film. I thought the trailer for it looked a bit ropey. And I was right, it was ropey as fuck. It was like, it started off okay. Like, it started off going, okay, we're going to, these two idiots have made a film. Oh, and look, the film is really terrible. And then cut to, like, a pretend cinema audience being pissed off that the film is shit. Because they literally start off by making it, like, one guy's in a swamp costume and Rick Moranis is in a nappy or something, and they're just shouting at each other around their van. And it's just...
Yeah, it's a jock protector thing that hockey players wear.
Right.
But, you're right. So I think we were on the same page at that point, at the beginning, where it was pretty funny just to have them immediately ruin the idea of making their own film.
It was having their cake and eat it, wasn't it? It was going, these guys would make a terrible film. Yeah. And they're going to.
I love the Canadian Mad Max that they had made.
They just stuck a lot of, like, like Blue Peter ingredients, like, on the front of their car.
And I liked the whole, you know, the audience turning on them, and he throws the moths out of the jar like he already suggested on screen.
My first qualm, right, they bring up, like, in their intro to the pretend film, they bring up, oh, wouldn't it be funny to let moths out in a cinema because they'd all go to the light? And they did it in the cinema, and you go, well, why didn't you show the moths on the projection? That was the whole... Like, I wanted to see the silhouette of the moth on the screen.
Because it wouldn't fucking work, would it? It was a stupid idea.
They didn't have real moths to do it with. And they couldn't be asked to... Like, I don't know. I thought it was a crap thing to do, that moth joke. But the idea of going, oh, look, we got the MGM lion, but it's drunk. I mean, it's a bit crap, but they kind of show that they couldn't get the MGM fake lion to roar. They go to them in their like TV studio environment, and they show that they've upped the production value, and they make a joke about making the map bigger on the wall. And you know, it presents them as crap TV presenters.
Yeah.
It intros them to us. And then it's quite a nice meta idea to go from that to the cinema of pissed off people when the film breaks, and they're trying to show you the film, like, frame by frame and stuff. And
it does a good job of setting up who they are and what kind, like, who they are and the type of humor for anyone who has no idea who they are.
Yeah.
I think it clearly sets the tone for the film, but I think the problem is a lot of the film after it doesn't consistently isn't as well thought out, as weird as it sounds, as that intro.
Well, it's a good conceit, and it's more cutting edge than you can give it. Like, now that kind of thing happens in films.
Yeah, they but for 1983,
That's ahead of the curve shit. That's clever comedy that's fucking with your expectations in a fun way, and then it proceeds to just have a really dopey, baffling, surreal plot that involves two idiots meandering their way through. Like, it's essentially the two main characters then meander through a story that focuses more on, like, a couple of other characters, and they just are dumb and dumbering their way through everything in a brewery.
It has a,
you know,
I thought it was interesting that it does that thing that a lot of films like this that take to the one in my head I keep coming back to is Beavis and Butthead Do America, where it takes characters that at that point have only been in 5-minute skits and it puts them in a reasonably big-ish plot. Like, Beavis and Butthead Do America has that whole thing about the weaponized virus, and then you've just got these two idiots who have no idea what's going on around them carrying that plot. And it's well done. And this film has that, but it doesn't have that established history. So the plot itself... And I think this is actually one of the things that does hurt the film, now I think about it, because those films work because they have an actual plot going on in the background to carry these characters that have only so far worked in little skits. So you've got that spine to keep the story moving. But I think the problem with this film is that you do have... Because it was based on Hamlet, which is brilliant.
It didn't join those dots without being told.
Because you have, you know, the brother killing his brother and marrying his wife, and
yeah, spot just like it, wasn't it?
Well, you have that, but I think the mistake they make is that
making a Shakespeare reference to people who like drunk humor.
Well, they take that idea of a plot, but they don't have.
I'm sorry, the key phrase you used there was the idea of a plot.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I mean. They take that idea or the idea for a plot, but instead of making one that is tight that they can then put these two idiots in to have them play off it, the plot's also kind of stupid and doesn't make any sense. Like,
it's a plot that consists... I guess the first thing that struck me is, I get it, you lower your expectations, go, okay, these guys, they're cartoonish characters, the plot's going to be a little tongue-in-cheek, and it's fine, you go, okay, they're going to go to a brewery, and they're going to get involved in that, they've got a... Like, basically, they're after beer for their dad, and they can't get it because they're idiots. And so they're going to try a scam where they have a mouse in a bottle and they're going to go and complain and get free beer at a brewery because that's where they've been told to go. And that's fine. I get it. But the film starts slowly to have moments that totally just jumps the shark. And you're going, you've gone from slightly cartoony idea to what the hell is happening? Why is there a man who's in a vent? Like, he's in like a... like. When someone's murdered, and then it turns out they're trapped in a video game,
that's what I was going to say next. Actually, you've got this whole weird ghost in the machine thing going on that's never addressed or explained, and that I think, as weird as it sounds as an example, that's what breaks the plot because there's no reason for it, and it makes the actual plot of the film so nonsensical that. It almost makes everything annoying.
Yeah.
Because now you're frustrated because you don't know what's happening. And every time it goes to Bob and Doug, who are by themselves are pretty endearing characters, you're like, for fuck's sake, I don't care about them. I want to know what the fuck's going on here now.
Yeah, because you can... I mean, I'll ask you guys, but were you on board with the idea that there's a beer master, or like a brewmeister or whatever, who has an evil scheme... This is the first. Let me just say it, and then you can discuss. Brewery. There's like the dad's been the owner's been murdered recently, but that's not the key thing. The thing is, there's a Max von Sydow is a brewmeister who has a plan to change the formula, like put something in beer that he'll ship out to the world, and then the people who drink it will be able to be controlled via notes on a keyboard. So a keyboard will be played in the special computer room they have hidden. So they'll play songs, and then you can get those people to play hockey against each other.
See,
whatever you want.
This is what I'm talking about. I think that there's a seed of a decent idea in there. The whole idea of drugging beer that everybody drinks to then mind control them. Fine.
No. Not fine. It's fine for a stupid comedy about beer. It's still a bad idea. It's still something you reject as a plot because there's no potential in it.
You can play it in some way.
We don't even know why he wants to drug people.
That's what I'm going to say. It's like they came up with that. I went, yeah, fine, that'll do. Keyboard, whatever. And
No. I cannot accept that that'll do for a bad... Like, it's still a bad idea for comedy.
No, that's what I'm agreeing with you. Like, they came up with the seed of an idea and just used that instead of developing it.
But they added to it in ways that you can't even fathom.
It just makes it more bizarre and difficult.
Anthony, did you understand what was happening with the hockey players and how they were controlled by music and why it was happening? Did you...
I think Jamie mentioned before that, like, just all the way through this film, you just start kind of tuning out at places.
Yeah.
And I had a very terrible thing happen where, like, the some of the things were so bizarre that you just turn back and, like, it's just people playing hockey and you're like, what? Or, like, you turn back and there's a flying dog dressed like a skunk and you're like, yeah. How the hell did we get here in the 30 seconds I wasn't watching the film?
You literally didn't tune out. You didn't miss a thing. It did go a handbrake turn and go, fuck it. This is the idea. There's a brewery. Yeah.
Like, Anthony, I think you were actually paying full attention. Because I think I had the same problem where I was sat there thinking, I'm not sure I was watching, but... Yeah. I actually was.
You were.
Okay. That kind of makes me happy in a one way and then kind of terribly sad in another.
But
Rich, you were saying, yes, it's kind of stupid. I'm sure, like, at the writing table, they were like, oh, yeah, well, they're using beer to control the masses anyway. Why don't we make it more overt and say there's actual mind-control drugs in there?
I think the writing table is a bit generous. Yeah.
No, this is what happened. I don't even agree they had those high notions in mind. What happened is someone got drunk and thought, it's like method writing. I'm writing about beer and jokes about alcohol. I should get drunk. And then every person who dealt with the script was drunk. And they were drunk making it. And then it was made. And it was exactly like drunk people had made it.
I do wonder the beer that they were drinking on film, whether or not it was actually beer, because it would not surprise me.
It could have been poison beer, because it must have been laced with something like LSD. They literally say, okay, when they're going to a brewery, and it starts off fine, and they go, right, there's an evil guy who works in the brewery, and there's an asylum, like a lunatic asylum nearby, because convenience, and... there's been some experiment going on where, like, a computer geek and a beer guy and a couple of other minions all work in a lab secretly and are murdering the boss to do so, and they're trying to have a secret recipe for beer that can control minds, and the way they try and experiment is to get, like, people from an asylum who apparently there's no one who works in the asylum to look after the mentally ill people who, like, there's no carers. They could just wander from there when they play a keyboard. Literally a keyboard. They play a keyboard, they come in, they put on hockey clothes for some reason. Like, black and white padding all over them so they look like kind of stupid soldiers. And they just they play hockey. And it's like, how does this plan eventually turn to world domination? Or what, like, this... why are they doing this? Why doesn't any of it make any sense? Like, and then it's sort of a little bit like the plot from Toys, which we did very early on.
Yes.
Where it's just like the wrong person is inheriting a factory and they don't have enough experience to take over. And, I mean, fuck.
See, that plot, the whole thing about her wanting, like, she should now have the company and there was a murder and stuff, that was enough.
Yeah.
That would have been enough.
That's the part I will say is the seed of an idea that works.
Okay,
like
yeah,
these two idiots turn up and get embroiled in a plot of essentially an heiress to a brewing company is not going to be the heiress because her uncle has married the widow of her father and they've kind of welched her out of a deal. And, you know, there's a bit of, oh, no, but, like, she has to be hidden from the secret evil fat stuff going on. I mean, that's a bit stupid, but she's being hidden from the bad side of the company and stopped from taking over. And these two derpy idiots are going to foil the plans by accident is an okay idea. But it's so random, so early on, I just couldn't take it.
Yeah, no, it immediately, as soon as they get to the brewery, it goes from about 5 to 1,000. Like, you know when someone says, oh, yeah, turn it up to 11? It didn't turn it up to 11. It actually just blows the speakers immediately.
Because the tone had been set with, like, okay, it's about stupid parents. Like, the early stuff is just, oh, the dog is going to get some beer. And, oh, our dad is cross with us, so we're going to give him some beer that's been in a dog bowl. Uh-oh, you give it to him, you give it to him. Aha, we dropped it. Like, it's kind of like, oh, crap. Like, I don't know, beer jokes and, like, you know, just idiot humour. And then it just goes, actually, we're more mental than that.
Yeah, it does. It ramps it up really fast and then doesn't take the time to really go into. And yeah, no, you're right. There's two plots. And either, like, the ARS one is fine, but it just throws in all this bizarre sci-fi shit, but without really playing up to the jokes of the sci-fi bit. It just kind of puts it there.
How do you think it's like a sci-fi?
You know what I mean? It's got,
like, it's got elements of, like, computers and video game machines.
Yeah, it's got that Buckaroo Banzai LED lights taped to a wall kind of thing going on.
Yeah, it's...
It reminded me a little bit of Buckaroo Banzai in that it had that... It's like it had its own world going on that it didn't stop to explain.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I don't like that film, for the record. But,
I think you would.
We're not here to debate that, but it is like Buckaroo Banzai. It's got its own logic and world, and it's kind of a it doesn't care about science making sense. And actually, I think, to try and be sly, Max von Sydow, at one point, like, for some reason, a laser blast comes out of a computer screen, bounces around the room and goes back in. I think he says something along the lines of, That made no logical or scientific sense. Yeah. So it's best we just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
He literally said that. It was just, don't worry about it if it doesn't make sense. And then at the very end of the film, another get-out clause is the two characters up over the credits go, oh, well, I thought that was pretty good, but I don't know, some stuff didn't make logical sense, but it was still pretty good, right? And it's like, you can't review your own film and get out of it by knowing it was crap. So late. Such a cheaty little film trying to be self-aware enough to let you get away with it. And I don't think it's okay to just throw in a couple of lines that makes you go, don't take us too seriously, we're just dicking around.
Do you know what? I think it would have been had at least I known more about the characters.
Well, here's the thing, right? You said there's two stories. I think the two main characters are the woman who is the heiress to the brewery, mm-hmm. And Abby, it's a character you quite like. Maybe you should explain him. But he's like the ex-hockey guy who just works there.
Abby? Oh, they called him Rosie.
Yeah.
It's Jean de Rose was his character's name.
Yeah.
He was one of the only characters in it who actually did things that had logic.
And he saved lives and he was sympathetic and you kind of liked it because he was normal.
It did that thing that films like this, again, often do, especially as the genre has kind of picked up and has become better, where you have your two idiot main characters, but you also have an actual hero, but he's secondary.
Yeah. Mm. It was the way he was introduced. He was just some bloke working in the factory. He seems incidental, because the first thing he does is just show these two idiots where they're supposed to go to meet the boss. And then he crops up a bit later, and they're like, hey, you're that hockey guy, eh? And it's like, yeah, and they have a nice moment where they like later on they bring him a hockey card, like literally a hockey card, like a chewing gum card for him to sign, and they have a kind of chat about his career, and it's like, okay, that's nice. I mean,
yeah,
hockey reference. And then later on he saves the day, he saves like the woman by diving underwater when they've you know, in one of the stupid plot elements where they've the whole thing like is stupid, but we'll get to it. But he saves a woman's life and sacrifices his own, and you know, luckily comedy saves the day, and you know, they survive. He survives, but initially you think, God, he took his own life to save her, and then later on he's the proactive hero of the piece, but he's still a side character. He's not really the focus.
Well, there's another film that I'm pretty sure you don't like that does the same thing, and it's Big Trouble in Little China, where you've got Kurt Russell as what you think is the hero, but his sidekick is actually basically the main character and the hero all the way through.
In that film, I don't like it, but I got my own different reason. The reason that works, in principle, is that that's a conceit. This one didn't say, oh, this side character. It's like the idea that he's kind of like, is it the Green Hornet who has the kind of assistant who's better than him?
Yeah. And it doesn't set it up at the beginning. It just kind of happens as the film goes on with it.
He's an incidental character who is sympathetic, less of an idiot, and he's like, there's lots of guys who work in the brewery that are just like, there's a guy who's injured and bandaged for the end of it. And he's just a friend of hers and he works there and he's fine. Like, there's a lot of people who aren't in on the conspiracy. And then even the bad guys are not that bad. Like the guy Wimpy from Popeye, isn't it?
Oh my God, you're right.
And he's like the father, he's the guy who owns the place, and he's, for some, he doesn't even explain why he hired Max von Sydow to be evil.
No, I think Max von Sydow worked there anyway.
Yeah.
They hired him not knowing he was crazy, then he revealed himself as crazy, and the other guy was okay with it. I think that's probably how that went down.
Because he got to own the factory by like, basically... Wimpy from Popeye, who doesn't, you know, he's got black hair and is being just played by the guy. But the guy, the brother of the guy who owned the brewery, is happy to take it over and bang the guy's widow, and doesn't mind murdering his brother. He's not really that evil either. I mean, his upcomings, I guess, is he goes to jail and he goes through like a labeling machine. That'll do. Like, that's his punishment for murdering his sibling.
One of the many problems I have with this film is that guy was too shit to be a murderer. Like
Max von Sydow squashes his head to make him do what he wants. He just grabs his head and goes, oh, do what I want or I'll crush your skull.
Oh, what are you talking? That was one of my favourite bits. I could crush your head like a nut.
It's a bit like bizarre and strange as Max von Sydow's character is, I buy that man will murder someone.
Oh, yeah.
But the other guy, I was just like, you've never killed anyone in your life. What are you talking about? Don't know.
Speaking of Max von Sydow, before I forget,
mm.
What was going on with his teeth?
He was wearing falsies, I think.
Yeah, no, I've never seen him look like that before. And I guess... they decided that that's what the character would look like?
No, well, it's one of those things that's to do with stunt casting, I think, where if you've got someone who is... how can I put this? Max von Sydow isn't known for being pompous, but he's in that same strata of actors.
Well, he's very heavyweight.
And as soon as you've got someone like that, then you want to give them a physical thing. So people go, look, Max von Sydow's got funny teeth.
Oh, like the Ming the Merciless outfit.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we can accept him as this over-the-top... I mean, he's got a stupid scheme, it doesn't make sense, but we get him as a villain. But he's got these lackeys that are not that... they're not like dimwits. There's like a computer expert guy who plays the keyboard to control the people, and he seems to be quite competent, but I don't know what his motivation is to do this.
Like, yeah, he's just kind of there.
He's just there to be bonked on the head and knocked out, and like that's the thing, is this kind of the first conspiracy is the guy who owned the brewery was bumped off, and they faked that his... I think the idea was that they faked that he was electrocuted by the main gate, and for some I don't understand how, but for some reason his soul is in one of the vending machines, is in like a computer game machine in the cafeteria that's closed. I don't think they explain a way that, like, even by stupid film logic, they don't explain how his spirit is locked
in
the machine.
Not that I didn't particularly love the film, but that is is my biggest gripe with it, which seems petty in a film that makes so little sense. Mm. But why is he in the? Why is he a ghost that lives in the computer? What is going on?
When did Tron?
Because the only reason it's there is because they needed a reason to move the plot along, and they couldn't think of a logical explanation.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, it's almost the only thing in the film that's actually set up and alluded to early on, but also comes to nothing.
Yep. Yeah, like, there's some stuff that happens that's random. Like, my favourite of the dumb things that happens is their dog can fly, and they paint it to look like a skunk, and that scares off people at Oktoberfest, which was going to be
poisoned. Who've
already
been drinking the beer anyway, so...
Yeah, well, let's just cover this now. The problem is that the beer is contaminated, so they can be mind-controlled if the keyboard is played in the special computer room. But it turns out that you could drink it, and the effects fade off eventually, and it doesn't harm you. And that's another joke for these Mackenzie idiots to go, "Well, you mean we have to save the people, but we don't have to save them. Can we take the contaminated beer and properly get rid of it, / obviously drink it, haha, we're comedy characters." And it's like, wait, if you could drink it and you're fine anyway, why did you even have to save these twats? Let them drink it and then the effects fade off, and as long as there's no one controlling them.
I think that's the thing. It's like, they can take it home now because they know not to listen to music or watch any hockey, or at least watch it on mute if they are going to.
They're not clever enough to not bugger it up somehow. They're going to die of whatever poisoning they get.
Well, yeah, they are.
Like, but the fact that the dog could fly, and they make it really a cheesy effect, and it's like obviously done for jokes. And I kind of accept the fact that they did it. It's so random and out of nowhere. The dog just starts flying away. Like, they show the dog the map of where it has to go, and it flies off, and it scares them because it's like a giant, looks like a skunk, even though it doesn't. And that's fine. But, you know, they didn't set that up or anything. The computer stuff is like more of an. It's not just, oh, he's randomly in a computer. It's a big part of it, and yet has no attempt at an explanation.
Yeah,
and they have a bit where, like, the guy who's dead appears as a laser. They do a really good effect, I thought. And he spells out, "Go save the people at the Oktoberfest," and then pisses off through a door.
Well, he also says, "Nice effect, see?"
Yeah, like, well, fuck
it. Do you know what? After talking about the lack of plot, I actually think it has the opposite problem. There's too much plot that hasn't been thought through, and they threw all of it in there.
Because kind of like your attention is kind of fixed on either just their bumbling antics, which just generally doesn't relate to anything else going on.
Yeah.
And then the other big chunk is just the storyline with the heiress, and then you're kind of waiting for that to conclude. And when it does, the movie goes like, oh, don't forget this plot point at the end. Yeah. Like I said, don't forget the Oktoberfest thing. And you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And they're like, there's more of this movie?
If they just stuck to the heiress thing, and maybe, and you could have still had, you know, the Hamlet shit going on. Like, you could have had it that they killed because they wanted to embezzle money or shut the brewery down or something.
Yeah.
But if you'd kept it with that kind of a reasonably grounded plot, you could have made more of the Mackenzie brothers and their kind of humor. Because, again, they were, to me, the only consistently funny thing throughout the film. And I was getting annoyed that they kept being put in these situations where it was almost like they were having to compete with the film itself.
Yeah, the things they did tangentially linked to what was going on. Like, for example, They turn up and they're like, oh, we got Kandi into, you put a mouse in this beer and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you hoses better give us some beer. And then they kind of go, I know, you can work in the factory. And it's like, no, that's not what they came for. Oh, they're idiots, so they're going to work in the factory now. Okay, whatever. They didn't ask to it. They just want beer, and they get to take beer home. They've kind of won at this point. They've got jobs, and they're getting beer for free. And it's like, well, okay, they're just there now. And then it becomes about, now that there's two guys working in this factory, let's bump off some more people. Like, they basically, the heiress and her friend or colleague find there's a secret computer room, and so Max von Sydow has to... He has set them up to be... Like, he finds them there, and has all, but then he sets them up by dressing up like the Mackenzies with his accomplice, yeah. And they use a special dart gun and knock out the... I don't know why they can't just kill her. They're trying to kill her anyway. They've already killed once. But they knock them out with special darts, and then they kind of set it up so they're framing the Mackenzie brothers. So they put their, like... bodies in kegs in the back of the Mackenzie's van, and then make sure the Mackenzie's take the special delivery somewhere, but they've rigged it so the brakes will eventually break after two brakes, and somehow know, I don't know how they plan the brakes to fail at the right point for them to drive off a dock, but that works, eventually it works after more padding and comedy. They fly off a ramp somewhere, splash into the sea and die. Only they don't die because luckily the beer bottles have air. The empty beer bottles in their truck have air in, and they could live on that. And who cares?
Do you know what? I just realised a lot happens in this film. Like,
well, a lot of stupid shit happens. Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. Too much stuff happens, and
most of it's done.
It is, but not like the only funny stuff is the Mackenzie stuff, and maybe one or two things with Max von Sydow. Like, it's just. There's, like I said, there's too many plots. There's too much going on. None of it's been thought through. So in and of itself, it doesn't make sense. So it's harder to appreciate the comedy of, you know, two idiots in a serious situation, which is what it should have been.
Well, I don't know. It takes a long time for this shit with, like, because the Mackenzie brothers have nearly drowned but are saved by a scuba team and drinking empty bottles of air from their van. And, like, they also save the guy, the hockey guy who dived in as well. And, like, all of the people who are in danger can't talk because they're either, like, catatonic with surprise or they're bandaged in a way that they can't talk and explain why the Mackenzies didn't really do it. And, like, they've set it up so the footage looks like it's these guys because of the costumes they're wearing. And then they just have shit where they're in jail and they're doing, like, oh... Like, one of the funny bits that comes of this, I guess, is the Mackenzies are having their fingerprints taken. They're also being put in a lineup. And they just fuck it up and they talk. And they keep having rows off the police for talking. And their reactions are just like, oh, sorry. Oh, and then they keep talking and arguing like children. And they're actually kind of endearing.
Yeah, that's... because, I mean, we've done a lot of complaining, but this is the stuff that I really liked, was you had them in the police lineup immediately incriminating themselves. You had them in the prison cell telling stupid fake stories about how dangerous they are, and everyone admires them. And that guy offers them cigarettes and then looks really sad and sheepish when he turns them down.
Like, there's some good work in there, isn't there? Abby, do you agree with Jamie that this is the one good part, is these two guys, or did you find them annoying, or what?
The brothers themselves are two of the worst characters I've ever seen.
So you weren't endeared by them. They are quite annoying, even though they're likeable, I think, just likeable. They keep saying the same things, and it gets a bit grating. Wait, you know
how you described them as, like, 10-year-old kids?
Yeah.
I don't like children. Consequently, I don't like adults who act like children.
And it's that kind of Cheech and Chong thing where maybe you have to be stoned to watch it. Maybe you have to be drunk to get it. Like, I don't know.
Like, I did kind of think that. Because I watched Cheech and Chong as well. And I'd never seen it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I just kind of thought, well, yeah.
It's kind of ropey. Like,
it's just kind of long and annoying.
I think that's the same thing. It's a movie you're meant to drink along with. So by the time you've got, like, the dog flying, you're like, this is hilarious, I love this. Yeah. And you have to be drunk.
It is a movie like movies like Cheech and Chong, or Harold and Kumar, that's another one. It is very, very, it is aimed at a very specific audience. And if you're not part of that audience... He's just
You're the sober amongst the drunks, then, aren't you? Watching this film,
yeah. Do you know what? That is exactly right. It is like being the designated driver, and everyone's getting drunk and like being funny in a way that only they find funny, and you're just sitting there drinking your fifth Diet Coke, being like, "Oh God, shut up, all of you, shut up."
Anthony, what do you think? Mackenzie's good or bad? Do they save anything, or are they actually annoying as well?
I'm kind of in the middle with what you guys are saying, because they are just a kind of one-note kind of joke, and you're right, there's not much diversity to their jokes, they're just kind of doing the same thing over and over again. But there are kind of like the moments where, like, I was surprisingly moved by when they had to kind of like separate.
Yeah, I know, me too.
And they just
really upset me.
Yeah, and they just kind of like had a moment, and I just like, I don't know, there was just something a bit more real about it, and it's just like, yeah, that was a nice
bit. Gave them a surprising amount of depth.
Yeah.
Could they become,
And then you just kind of like, anyone who's kind of had like a best friend or a kind of like brother, you kind of get it, the kind of thing they're going for there. Well, and then you kind of understand them as characters a bit more.
I think understand.
So,
like you have
they're likable, but I'm glad the whole film isn't just them.
Yeah, I think because at one point, like towards the end, they're both in their pajamas because I don't know they've lost their clothes because the asylum people have nicked them.
It's when they're in the asylum, but they're wearing pajamas that like kids would wear, and again, it was one of the parts where it got my attention again because I thought it was funny where they just steamroll each other.
Oh yeah,
they kind of just roll over each other. Oh, this is the thing. I love them when you take them as 10-year-olds, two 10-year-old boys, and like the perfect way that comes across is A, they're in pajamas and act like it, but the bit where they're arguing and then one of them just goes like to spit on him, and he goes, "Oh no, like that's like when he actually tries to make spit instead of threatening to spit." It's like these two 10-year-old boys who are in this film are kind of, I think, likeable. But because they're not 10, and they're meant to be these crap TV show idiots, I go, oh, well, fuck you. Like, it's like, they're not always endearing, because they're so stupid. They're such stupid caricatures of Canadian idiots. It just loses me every now and again. But I did laugh from time to time at one of their reactions to each other. The way they bicker is funny, I think. Generally,
I think the way they react to situations is funny, and that's again why I think it would have worked better to have just the heiress plot and make it at least reasonably grounded and serious, and throw these two idiots into it. Yeah. But this is a problem that a lot of comedies have when they move from TV to the big screen, and it's actually making me think of Police Squad moving up to the Naked Gun, because. I mean, I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I don't think the Naked Gun films, although I do like them, I don't think they're as funny as Police Squad.
Police Squad is better, but it is the time, like a 20-minute episode works.
But also the difference between
the adult
Police
humor.
Squad and... No, it's Leslie Nielsen's performance.
Do you reckon?
Because in Police Squad, he plays Frank Drebin completely straight. There's no mugging for the camera. There's no being, you know, wacky and whatever. Whereas in The Naked Gun, he himself is a lot more of a comedy character. Like, they take Frank Drebin and they make him more cartoony and wacky. They make him somewhere between Mr. Magoo and Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah.
And he's, like, pulling faces and doing slapstick comedy. And he still does it well. Like, Leslie Nielsen's funny.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work as well as having a 100% straight character. Yeah. In amongst all the stupidity. And this has the same problem. You've got these two characters who are just ridiculous and stupid. And I think that would work if you had a plot that played it straight. But you have a plot that's trying to be as ridiculous as the two characters.
Yeah, it's wacky and over the top.
Yeah, it's too much. It's just...
Yeah. And there's never any jeopardy, really, because none of the good characters are tricked at any point by the bad ones. Like, they go to court at one point, and it's like, oh no, these guys are gonna look like they were murderers, or that they're insane, and they are insane, so they should have been committed. But there's at no point do any of the good characters doubt the motivations of the Mackenzie brothers, and like there's never much malice with the evil characters either. They don't have hatred in them. They're just
there was a
there was another to get away with it.
Or there were another couple of nice, just minor
moments?
Humorous moments with the McKenzie brothers that I wish there had been more of. When they make each other laugh, and Bob, which I don't remember, is Doug the older one? Dave Thomas?
I don't know.
But anyway, he gets a nosebleed. Yep. And then it cuts to a little bit later, and he's just got this mass of tissue up against his face. And the fact that there wasn't really much of a reference to it, he's just there in the background, I like. But again, like a lot of things in this film, they take it too far with the whole sticking bullets up his nose, and then he laughs hard and fires the bullets. I'm just like, what? What?
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to land on stuff like, okay, so at one point, two people are trapped in a what is the thing in the brewery where they're like,
it's like a giant vat of yeah,
they're trapped in a filling up vat of beer. You know they're not going to drown, and then the reveal being that he drank all the beer and is now blown up even bigger than the fat girl in Wonka, the chocolate factory. They could do the whole, oh no, I'm all swollen up with beer, and then it's just like, oh, that's a bit crap. And then they go, and then he saves the day by pissing out a fire, and you just go, oh, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah. See, I got very upset when that happened.
Because suddenly it's so much more unrealistic than an already weird film.
That's so crap. They don't even show it. Like, I think, Abby, you were part worried they were actually going to show him piss out a fire.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. This isn't a Farrelly Brothers film. It's not. No.
No, just that was probably my saddest moment during this whole film, where, first of all, I thought he was going to piss out of the tank, and then he only belched, which is so much better. And then when they alluded that he might piss out the fire, I was like, please don't piss out the fire. Then they cut away to just after he'd pissed out the fire, and they were saying, like, you did it in 2 minutes. It would have taken us 2 hours. Like, ugh.
Where are the jokes in this? like,
and this is what I mean, though. They're leading up to that and how crap it was, there were better minor jokes. They're
funnier walking down a corridor talking than they are doing a bit.
The whole thing with him in chest deep in the beer with the girl, I don't even remember what the character's name was, the heiress.
Yeah.
And she goes, hey, it's just got warmer. And he kind of goes, oh, I didn't notice any difference. That joke fits the level of their... No, it is, but it fits the level of their humour as these two overgrown 10-year-olds. And it's fine as with them as characters. The whole drinking all the beer and inflating thing is... It doesn't work, because it just... Nothing else like that has happened so far, and suddenly it's this... It's like the flying dog. It's like, what? How? What?
Yeah, you can have a little bit of weird in there, but it didn't earn it, because so many time you have something a bit baffling and stupid happen, that it hasn't earned it because it's wasted time doing stuff like, oh, we better go back to our house to see our parents. Oh, they've drank all the beer, and I've walked in on them having sex. Okay. And hang on, why the fuck is Daffy Duck doing the voice of their dad? What is happening?
To say, although the sex joke is pointless and crude, I did laugh at the fact that the parents were also played by Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis, just because.
But they were voiced by, what's his name, the guy who does all the.
Oh, like, Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc. Yeah. Wow, that was really weird. His voice is so recognizable, and like, I don't know. Like, so they played their own parents. Well, so what?
The dog flying thing actually is another really good example of ramping up a joke way too fast, because just before that was a minor joke that I really liked, where they get the dog and they get a map and they're giving the dog directions, and I'm like, you fucking idiots. But then I thought it would be that the dog would run off and then turn up at the event. Perfectly fine cartoony joke. But when the dog takes off, it just takes what was a funny small joke about these two guys just being stupid into just fucking insane what the fuck is happening territory. It's like being the designated driver amongst a bunch of drunk people.
Yeah, and all the good characters are there witnessing this, and they just shrug it off like, oh yeah, the McKenzie brothers, that was really sensible of them.
The dog like grows a cape or something, like What, did he get a feather like Super Mario World? What's happening?
Jamie, it's not scientific in any way.
It's best
you don't worry about it at all. Anyone else got other bits of the film they want to bring up as either good or bad points?
Not much more, but I kind of want to bring up the point that I feel a bit let down by the way that Max von Sydow's character kind of like died. Because like it was kind of poetic because they kept making jokes about the lights on this like giant map they have in the basement. And then he ends up doubling
as a toilet. The map of the world with lights is also a toilet. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, so it's kind of poetic that that's how he dies, but like, I don't know, it just happened so quickly and lamely, and also with all the lights kind of like shining through his body, and it's like, what the fuck was that?
Why?
Why did the lasers come through him? It's just LEDs. They're not even that dangerous. They let children weld with them in school.
Can you imagine if a Christmas tree was that fucking dangerous?
Some of them are, if they were built post-1984.
There's probably more of a chance of if you fell into a Christmas tree, you would lose your life.
What, did they kill the factory owner who took over, like the uncle? Did they kill him or did he just get arrested?
I think he just got arrested.
He went through the package up thing, didn't he?
Computer guy who's equally complicit in this, what happened to him?
They think he died, but all that really happened was that Rosie kind of pushed him.
Where?
Into a room in the asylum.
Oh, like, yeah, that's the last you see of him. He just shoves him into a room and shuts the door.
Rosie kind of saved the day a bit more because he did stuff proactively, whereas the McKenzie brothers just farted their way to success most of the time.
That just reminded me as well, there was another bit with the McKenzie brothers that I liked and I wish there had been more similar things where they were just dicking around with the electroshock equipment.
Yeah, and they were kind of peeved to be interrupted, and they answer the phone, and it's like they're playing doctors or something. Yeah. They're just trying to shock each other for no reason.
It's like having little bits of perfectly good character comedy amongst all of this just nonsense that I don't care about.
Yeah. Abby, are there any moments you want to bring up now before we conclude what we thought?
If I bring up one, I have to bring up all. And we'll just be here all night if we do that. The only thing that I have to talk about perfectly exemplifies how I feel about this film. I don't have a metaphor this week. I have a moment from this film that perfectly demonstrates how I feel about this film.
Yeah. No.
Was that it?
No. although it does relate, if that's what I thought it was. About your dog, Anthony.
It was.
And it relates.
Go on.
What was it?
Well, you want me to... But are we wrapping up then?
Yeah, no, wrap up. That leads... there's nothing much else to say.
The film is so messy that I think it's hard to even pin down...
what exactly anything. We've watched.
Yeah.
So, Abby, feel free to sum up your feelings and try and force some kind of conclusion on us, please.
Well, you know when they're showing the map to the dog? And the dog is in between them, and he's sort of looking from side to side between them. That dog is scared and confused, and it doesn't know where it's supposed to be looking or what it's supposed to be doing. And that is how I feel about this film. I am that dog, as it's sitting between those two guys, not knowing what the fuck is going on.
It doesn't get the jokes. It doesn't understand what's happening to it. And I still think it was kind of, the way they react to the dog is still kind of funny. I get you. You feel like a victimized dog who doesn't appreciate what's happening to it.
You're watching this film. You were like a creature without the cognitive ability to understand any of the language going on around it.
Yeah. And as it was happening, I wished that I could just jump into the air, have the ability to fly, and fuck off elsewhere.
That's because you're a giant skunk with superpowers. Wait, no, that doesn't make sense. But yeah, I can understand where you're coming from. I feel I didn't want to fly away quite as much as you, Abby, but like there were times where I resented the film being so crap. Because you've got to make a film. You're trying to, you know, push your comedy careers further. You're celebrating some characters you've come up with. And I resented the times where you could have just put in more effort and made it better and made it more satirical. You didn't have to, like, if you've got ideas of referencing Hamlet, that's fine. But you don't have to make everything just, that'll do. That's in the nature of these characters. Their film should represent them and be terrible because they're idiots as well. And I felt like at the end it just kind of, it ended and they drove off with a beer that was poisoned and didn't care that it was poisoned because it didn't matter, apparently. And then it cuts to the guys back in their studio going, oh, so that was the film, eh? Oh, what a load of hosers. Oh, you know, like they say all their shit and they act like idiots again. And they talk over the credits. And there's a point when they've clearly, like, you can see Rick Moranis is, like, looking off to maybe a director or producer and is like,
yeah, I know.
There's more time to fill. You need to keep going. The credits wouldn't have aired yet. And then they just say random crap at the end to fill time.
There is a point there, though, where I think both of them almost, they're, like, corpsing. Like, they're starting to laugh. And at that point, I thought, why couldn't the rest of the film been that genuine?
Yeah, I could have dealt with it better if it had, instead of being just stupid and confusing, if it had just been these two guys doing a stupid movie, like you say, like the examples you've used, good and bad, they can just be characters in it and have fun. But it wasn't. It was a mess. It was a mess like having, I don't know, my metaphor is, it's like having a hilltop with a lunatic asylum and a brewery and a castle on it. And it's, you're just asking for stupid crap to happen. And it did happen. It was just contrived, baffling, illogical, and there wasn't enough consistent funny to see me through the hard times where I was actively hating how shit it was being. So for every funny joke, there's a bad joke, and for every stupid bit of plot, there's dull bits of plot. So yeah. It doesn't come off very good. It's like a really stupid setup where you keep your brewery next to your asylum, next to your castle on a hill, and you go, I don't know, my metaphor doesn't work, but neither did the film, so fuck
you. You might be able to go with some kind of Sims metaphor or some kind of builder where you put stuff where you can afford to put it within the confines of the map, not where it makes sense for it to be.
Right, and this film is like drunk people made it playing Sims. I don't know. I haven't got a metaphor. It's crap, and it should have tried harder. And it's just a film for people who think beer jokes are hilarious. And if that's your bag, it's great because it's great if you're drunk, I presume. And that's it. It's just a crappy. It's the drunk equivalent of a stoner movie. And I'm not interested. So no thanks. It's a bit insensitive towards Canadians, but hopefully they could take a joke. So. Whatever. I give up. I throw it in the towel. I don't care about it enough to be concise. It was stupid. And doesn't deserve the 70-odd% it gets on Metacritic-type things. People are wrong for thinking it's brilliant and funny. It should have a more average. It's like it isn't good enough to be that high. Generally, I don't know what drunks are watching this and rate to get really high, but it is held in more affection than it deserves.
Well, you know, it's the same with movies like Cheech and Chong or whatever. It's very much considered a defining film of the whole cult movie genre, especially because it's from 1983.
Sure.
I can understand back when it came out how it would have been successful with a certain audience because there weren't, you know, it was still a burgeoning kind of genre.
Yeah, I guess the slack gets cut. Like, you can cut it some slack for being ahead of its time in some aspects. And Cheech and Chong, even though now it looks a bit dated and a bit lame, it was early alternative comedy, you know, in America.
Yeah,
it's appealing to a demographic that previously didn't exist.
I think it has its place in the the pantheon of cult movies that have a really passionate fan base. But at the same time, I think the number of films like it that have come after, that have come since, of people our age or of our generation or later, where it's hard not to be kind of numb to anything innovating that may have been in it. and it's hard to see that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I didn't dislike it quite as much as you guys did, but I didn't. It didn't resonate with me very much. My problem with it was that there wasn't enough of a hook behind the two characters. And I wasn't interested in anything going on outside of Bob and Doug. I liked them as characters and I found them kind of endearing in their stupidity. But there wasn't enough for them to play off.
No.
And I would prefer it a lot more if there was a completely played straight dramatic plot with these two idiots in it, kind of like Beavis and Butthead Do America and its whole virus thing.
Yeah.
And I have already come up with my metaphor by accident. I very much felt like the designated driver on a night out.
Yeah.
And especially the way the film goes on, because like at the beginning when they're doing the whole thing in the cinema where, you know, they messed up the movie, all perfectly good and funny, and I thought, ah, this isn't so bad.
Yeah, well,
you know?
drunks are funny. To hang around with drunk people is funny.
Like I said, I'm on my first Diet Coke,
and
everybody's on their first drink, so everyone is still pretty funny because they're still fairly lucid. And then as the film goes on, same way as the night goes on, and I'm still trying to drink Diet Cokes just because I've got something to drink. Everybody else is hammered, and they're all making jokes that really don't make sense. They're laughing over shit isn't funny.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the end of the night, I'm just like, oh, God, I hope they're ready to go home.
Yeah, and also, drunks, when they've come up with an in-joke, it's callback all the time. If something made someone laugh, it's repeat that ad nauseum, and that gets grating. And this film just sort of...
does the same thing.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
So it is like that. It was a good metaphor we chanced upon, and you've honed into a succinct one. Anthony, you're the only one left to go. Let's hear it.
I didn't like the film. There's more to come. That's not just my summary.
click the end.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I couldn't really focus on it. I never found anything. Like, is it anything hysterically funny, or there was no particular flair to the film, the directing? Like you said, it was directed by Rick Moranis and the other guy, and Dave Thomas. And it's like you can kind of see it's very humdrum the way it's done. There was never any kind of flair or anything really that interesting going on. And like looking up some of the reviews afterwards, it was kind of weird because they were all kind of like 10-star reviews. Oh, this is the funniest thing ever. This film is awesome. Yeah. And I didn't really get it at first, but now I do kind of after like all this speaking, because we all have that one film that like we all saw one day with our friends and maybe we were drunk or maybe we had too many sweets. Who knows? Like for me, that film is like Kung Pao, Enter the Fist. Sure. And to take the film on its own, like if you ever watched it on your own sober, you'd watch it and go like, this is the lamest thing ever.
I think there's more satire in Kung Pao because it's pastiching a genre properly. Whereas this film isn't really a genre. It's maybe a conspiracy thriller, but actually it's just, whatever dumb stuff we can come up with. You know, so I'd say that's the difference.
Yeah, that's true. But like, they all exist. Like, there's the Cheech and Chong movies, Harold and Kumar, and just, you know, stuff like that. And just this, this just is not meant for us.
Yeah,
it's for like people... this was made for drunk people in the early 80s from Canada, and it's just not for us. We're just not going to really get it on a fundamental level.
It's not our dumb movie that we like and we know it's bad.
Yeah. And it's just, we're never going to get it. And that's just like a fundamental flaw, kind of like of the film, if you see what I mean.
It's not a timeless classic, but it can't be, really.
You know, there's dumb stuff in there that is enjoyable enough. Like, you know, their dynamic is fine.
Yeah.
Like, there are some moments where it kind of... hits a, like a Zucker Brothers movie kind of note. Like, I remember there's a bit where they kind of turn into stakes in the dog's eyes. Sure. You know, it's got some moments like that. But, yeah, it's really just out of time and out of place. It's really hard to see the merit in the film, and you're just going, I don't get it.
That's how me and Abby felt about Second City from the 70s. It was just, you couldn't make that jump, couldn't be from that time period.
So if I did have some kind of metaphor, it's I suppose it's that, just like an object, which is nothing specific, like another movie perhaps, or like a food,
maybe an old beer that has long since left.
Yeah, maybe it's like a really horrible, cheap, but strong, like, alcohol spirit that you've brought to your, like, teenage party, like your first teenage party. And on its own, it's just, no one likes it.
Like, it's painted.
Yeah, pretty much. No one likes it. No one has heard of it before. But kind of, given the right circumstances, the
fuck
right
it, it's
people...
Fuck it, it's still alcohol. Fuck it, it's still a movie. Yeah.
And it'll get, the kind of, by the end, like, it might make the whole night. But take it out of that context, and it is just awful.
Yeah, if you drink it alone, you feel like the worst person in the world. But if all of you are drinking the horrible concoction, then you might all have fun by the end, especially if you're drinking along with this film, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or be dead. Either way.
Yeah, so it's a terrible drink. It's being sober with drunks. It's, I didn't really fully commit. It's I sort of said it was a bit like the hilltop full of stupid contrivances. And Abby, what did you say? Yours was not quite a metaphor, but
she was the confused dog.
Oh yeah, you were possibly drunk and out of context, like just a regular dog in a film it doesn't understand. Borderline on torture for you, but a payday for the handler, nevertheless. yeah, so you know that was Strange Brew, and it was a strange film. It certainly delivered on the strange part. But that's the end of us chatting about it, right, guys?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Last chance to get a stupid Canadian catchphrase out. Eh?
Nope. Take off, eh?
There's a weird phrase, take off. It's like, take off doesn't mean leave, because they've never parted, those two guys. Take off. Yeah, take off elsewhere and, yeah, whatever. Yeah, sorry, any more?
No, good.
Good, I don't feel the urge. Anyway, ta-ta. Bye.
Bye.
Toodaloo.